Good.
Good luck.
Okay, so this parasha is parasha's Vayera. Before I start, actually, if you can just watch the note, I'm thinking of, after this week, there's 4 weeks left of the term. I think I'm doing something a bit different. So stay tuned the next few weeks. I might experiment with something. So watch the notifications. Okay. So it's Parshas Vayera. Parshas Vayera is an amazing parasha. Of course, it starts off with Avraham Avinu recuperating from his bris milah, from his circumcision, after 99 years old. And then it has the destruction of Sodom and the whole story surrounding the destruction of Sodom. And then towards the end, there's the famous parsha of Akedah. Akedah was the 10th test that was given to Avraham Avinu, and it's the one that we get the most mileage out of. We keep on mentioning it in our tefillahs. We mention it constantly in the tefillahs of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and we ask Hashem to remember the merit of the Akedah, and so on and so forth. So, just a couple of small things on the parasha, and then I want to do something a little bit different today. Do something on the haftarah actually, and we'll look at that. But one of the things that happens when Avraham Avinu is recuperating, we know that Hashem doesn't want to bother him with guests, so he makes it very, very hot, and then Avraham Avinu is upset, so he's sitting at the doorway of the tent, waiting for guests, and Hashem, what do you think, Rabbi Chumash? Page 78. And Hashem sends him the three angels, right? Three angels we know, by the way, are the three angels called Michael, Gavriel, and Raphael. Each one was there to do a different mission. Michael was there to bring the news that Sarah would have a child. Gavriel was the one to destroy Sodom. You can tell why, because Michael and Gavriel is Chesed and Gevurah. Right, so obviously the news that Sarah would have a son is Chesed, destroying Gevurah is destroying Sodom is the concept of Gevurah. And then Raphael is interesting because Raphael comes to the word Refuah, and he had two missions. One was to help Avraham Avinu recuperate, to heal Avraham, and also to save Lot from the city of Sodom. Okay.
Rabbi, sorry, random question.
Sure.
Uriel,
I don't know, he's not in this formula. No, he's also a malach. I don't exactly.
That must be a big one if these three are in this parsha and he's.
Yeah, but this parsha has got to do with the missions that they have. So the ones that were assigned have to do with the particular missions that they had. I'm not sure Uriel comes into the Sfirot, for example, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet. I don't know how it works. I'm not sure. I know Bechol and Gavril is Chesed and Gevurah, but yeah. One of the things we know that. If you have a look in page 78, I'm sure I mentioned this before, but I'll just mention it again. In the second line, right? You've got the second pasuk. Avraham Avinu is sitting there, and it says, "Vayisa eino vayar." He looked up, he lifted his eyes, and he saw. "Vehinei shloisha anoshim." There were three men nitzavim alav standing there. "Vayar," and he saw. "Vayaretz likrasa," and he went to meet them. He went to greet them. He pesach oil from the door of the tent. And he bows down to them and he asks them to come in and so on and so forth, right? So Chazal learned from here an interesting thing that, as Rashi brings also, that Gedoyla Hachnosas Orchim Kabolas Bnei Ashkena, that inviting in guests and welcoming guests is greater than welcoming the divine presence. How do we know this? Because Avraham Avinu was talking to Hashem. Hashem had come to visit him because he was Bikur Chaylim. And he interrupts Hashem to go deal with the visitors, right? So we know that dealing with visitors is even greater than talking to Hashem. So there's a famous question. I heard this from my father, Alav Shalom, when I was very young. He told me this word. The question is, we know this concept from Avraham Avinu, but how did he know it? It's very nice. We know it because we learned from the story, but how did he know that was the right thing to do? So one of the answers that's given for it is like this, that Avraham Avinu in Kabbalah, the Arizal brings this down a lot, was called the Merkava Lelakus. He was like a chariot for godliness. What does that mean? Just like a chariot has no independent will, so to speak, a chariot goes where its driver tells him to go. So too, Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak and Yaakov had lifted themselves up to such a madrega that they had trained their very being to do what Hashem wants them to do. So when Avraham Avinu was talking to Hashem, then he saw visitors, he felt himself going, he knew it was the right thing to do. Right? I always say to people, this is what people say in society about trusting your instinct, that's garbage most of the time. Because we have so many different layers, who knows where it's coming from, the ego, the neshama, because we can't really trust ourselves, right? I mean, sometimes it's motherly instincts and that kind of stuff, but generally speaking, we have to question ourselves, right? But when it comes to Avraham Avinu, he could trust himself because he had trained his body, all the Ovos and the Imois, right? Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, Sarav Baruch Leh, they trained themselves to go in the way of Hashem, to do what, for their body to respond in the way Hashem would want them to respond, right? So that's what we learned here. But I also explain something at the end of the parasha. If you go to the end of the parasha, page 102, we have the story of the Akedah. Yeah. Have a look at page 102. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. So Avraham Avinu comes to the mountain, he binds Yitzchak, he's all ready to go. And then it says, Vayishlach Avraham es yodeh, and Avraham Avinu sent his hand. Vayikach es ha-ma'acheles lishchot es b'noi. And he took the knife to actually slaughter his son. That was the act of the Akedah. So the first one asks the question, it's a very strange expression. There's a Torah doesn't use extra words, right? Why doesn't it say Avraham Avinu took the knife? What do you mean he sent his hand? That's a very weird way of talking. I sent my hand. You don't send your hand, right? So what happened was like this. And using what we just explained helps explain this. Here we had a complicated thing. Avraham Avinu, Hashem told Avraham Avinu to take his son Yitzchak and offer him up as a korban on the Mizbech, right? But in that particular instance, Hashem hid his true will from Avraham Avinu. Hashem didn't really want him to bring Yitzchak as a korban. He presented that as his will, but it wasn't really what he wanted him to do. Right? As soon as he was going to shecht him, Hashem told him to take him down. So Avraham Avinu comes to the Akedah, and he's heard specifically from Hashem that he needs to bring Yitzchak as a korban, and therefore there's no two ways about it. And he's about to take the knife, and his hand doesn't go. Because he trained his body to do the true will of Hashem. So, and there was a contradiction between what the true will of Hashem is and what he thought the will of Hashem was. But he was convinced that it is the will of Hashem to take the knife, because Hashem had said that to him specifically. So therefore, by Yishlach Es Yodeh, he sends his hand. It's that he sends his hand to go and to go and visit Hashem. To go and shecht Yitzchak. So that explanation, how we know that from the beginning of the parasha, explains that expression of Ayishlach at the end of the parasha.
So he knows that Hashem has instructed him to do it, but he knows also that Hashem doesn't really want him to do this.
He doesn't know that. His body responds that way.
His body responds that Hashem doesn't want him.
Right, and that's why his hand's not going. He doesn't know why.
Because
consciously, in his consciousness, he understood that Hashem did want him to do it because Hashem had told him so.
But being a wheel of the chariot.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, but he thought something had gone wrong this time. Maybe his wheel of the chariot has been weakened, whatever. Because he heard specifically from Hashem to do it. Right? Yeah, true. Normally he could trust himself, but he thought this time it's not working because I heard specifically from Hashem that I should do it. And yet his body's not responding that way. That's why Vayishlach Es Yodeh, he sends his hand. It's a beautiful idea. You know my father told me this? You know, we all have funny memories that stick in our heads, right? So I was in younger years of high school, and it was a small school observatory in Johannesburg. And the Rosh Hashiva, they had a minhag that every Friday we used to have an assembly. And either he would speak, like he'd give us an inspirational speech, or we'd get a guest. But before he did that, he'd always get one of the students to speak. And it was one year, Parshas Vayera was my turn. So I came to my father around Wednesday time and said, "What should I say? Give me an idea." So he told me this verse. That's what I said at the assembly. Just remember these things, sure. Anyway, okay. So let's go back to the beginning of the parasha. Rashi says that he came, Rashi says, what does it mean by Yeru El Hashem, that Hashem appeared to Avraham Avinu? Rashi says that Yom Shlishi L'Milaseh Hoya, it was the third day of the Bris Milah, right? And Hashem came levakir es achoylet to visit the sea. By the way, this is what one of the things the Gemara says. You know, it says in the Torah that we should walk in the ways of Hashem. The Gemara says, what does it mean to walk in the ways of Hashem? That just like Hashem does kindness, we should do kindness. Just like Hashem visits the sick, we should visit the sick. That's one of the sources of the idea of bikur cholim, right? Of visiting the sick. Hashem visits Avraham Avinu, so we should do that as well. Just like Hashem buries the dead, as he did with Moshe Rabbeinu, we should bury the dead, and so on. A lot of examples, just like Hashem makes close to people, like the Adam and Chava, we should give close to people, and so on. So we learn the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So the question is, if Hashem was performing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim to visit the sick, why did he wait till the third day? Avraham Avinu was sick right away. Why did he have to wait till the third day? So there's a number of reasons. One reason is that, and this is based on Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Or HaChaim HaKadosh says like this. There's actually a halacha. You're not supposed to, if a person gets sick, you're actually not supposed to visit them until the third day. Yeah? Huh?
Yeah, but I don't know why.
Yeah, why? Because although visiting the sick is a very good thing, but also it's got to do with like an evil eye and iron horror and all these things. We don't draw attention and cause publicity for the person not being well. If 3 days pass and the person is anyways not well and he's still sick and then it becomes known anyways, then it's important to visit him. But actually, spiritually speaking, and therefore even for their physical welfare, because that's connected to the spiritual welfare, it's better not to visit them and not cause a whole commotion in the first 3 days. That's why Hashem didn't visit him to the third day. But the question is, it doesn't really work. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, it says, right, that who's not allowed to visit them? People, generally. But family is. Close family is allowed to visit. And Hashem is family. Hashem is our father. So why can't Hashem visit Avraham Avinu before the third day? Right? The answer is, why is family allowed to visit? Because family visit keeps it private. It's still quiet, under wraps, so you know, your spouse, your daughter, your son, not well, you visit them, you help them out. It doesn't cause a commotion. So the fact that Hashem's family doesn't help. When Hashem visits someone, it does cause a commotion. So it does draw attention to it. So therefore, the exemption for family wouldn't apply to Hashem, and therefore Hashem didn't visit him until the third day. That's one idea. The other idea is, I think something we've shared before, but just to share it again in the context of this parasha, that actually draws attention to a very, very important thing. There's something the Rebbe explains in one of the talks, and that is like this. That mitzvahs, that we do mitzvahs, right? Mitzvahs have to be done naturally. There's a whole concept that one shouldn't do a mitzvah in like a supernatural way, because the whole idea of mitzvahs is to draw Hashem into the physical world, right? Therefore, mitzvahs need to be done naturally. So there's a famous story, I'll tell you the story a little bit so you understand the idea. There's a famous story of when the Alter Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, sat in jail, right? There was a libel against him and they arrested him and so on. When he sat in jail, he sat in a Russian jail, which is a very fortified, secure jail. And around the jail, there was like a moat for security, right? There was like a moat that you had to go by ship, by a little boat. In the middle of his imprisonment, he was taken out of prison. It was the month of Kislev, or the month of Cheshvan, which was because of Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And he was taken out, and he was taken to the courtroom. It was the beginning of his imprisonment. It was the month of Cheshvan, right? And as he was taken to the courtroom, he was put into this moat, and he was outside for the first time since he was arrested. And realized that it's his opportunity to do Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana means it's a thing where you say a bracha on the renewal of the moon each month. It's a bracha which Chazal instituted you say on the renewal of the moon. But the halacha is you're supposed to say this bracha stationary, you're not supposed to be moving, right? So the Alter Rebbe asked the driver of the ship if he could please stop so he can say the bracha. He laughed at him, he says, "Not stopping." So the story goes that the Alter Rebbe, with his miraculous powers, made the boat stop. And what did he do? He didn't say the bracha. He said the introductory Tehillim, which is in the Siddur, is a minhag, it's a custom to say a chapter of Tehillim before you say the bracha on the renewal of the moon. So he said that chapter to him, and then the boat started to go again. So the guy saw he's not dealing with a regular guy. So then he turned to him and he says, "Now will you stop? Now will you stop?" So he says, "Yes, on one condition, that the Alter Rebbe gives him a bracha for a long life." And Alter Rebbe did, and it was known 3 generations later who that guy was. He, some through the other Rebbes, they actually lived to a very, very long life. Okay. So the famous question on the story is, if the Alter Rebbe had the power to make the boat stop, so why don't you just do it for the whole thing? Why do you have to make it stop? Say the Tehillim, and then it should go, and then ask the guy to stop, and the guy should stop, the driver should stop. The answer is, because you don't do mitzvah through a miracle as much as possible. Mitzvahs have done nature, because the whole point of mitzvahs is to impact nature. And therefore, making the boat stop miraculously is not the way to do Kiddush Levodim. I say with the Arizal, this is a concept which is very much emphasized in the Arizal's writing. Now, that's why Arizal said that when you do a mitzvah, it has to cost you. So the Arizal used to go buy an esrog. He would, nowadays it costs a fortune for everyone, but the Arizal would go buy an esrog, he would choose a beautiful esrog, and he would take out his wallet and he would tell the guy, no negotiations, take what you need. Why? Because he wanted the mitzvah to come with effort. It's to pay for a mitzvah, right? Interesting thing, based on the Sarizal, you know, the Rebbe had a custom that when the famous thing, would give dollars every Sunday, right, to tzedakah. People would come, thousands and thousands of people. So very often, people would bring him things. So very often, if someone published a new sefer, they would bring the sefer to the Rebbe by dollars, right? The Rebbe had a minhag that every time someone gave him a sefer, he'd give him an extra dollar and he would say, for a sefer, you have to pay. Interesting thing, we'd never take it as a gift. For a sefer, you have to pay. I remember once watching a video, this one guy didn't quite understand it, so I said, no, Chas V'Sholem, Rebbe, I want to give it as a gift. And he says, no, Rizal says you have to pay. He insisted. Right? Even if it's only $1, but you got to pay for a safe. Okay. So this idea, that Rebbe takes at the beginning of this parasha as well. When Hashem came to Avraham Avinu, even when a regular person goes to visit someone that's sick, even when we visit sick, it says in the Gemara, that when you visit someone who's sick, you take away a little bit of the illness. That's part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. When Hashem comes, it's going to be like a miraculous recovery, right? Now we know the third day is the worst day, right? So Hashem, when he came to visit, it wasn't just coming to visit to see how he was. It was coming to visit to help him heal. That's why he was sent to Malach Rafal, Hashem through the Malach, however the process worked, right? But if Hashem would come the first day, the natural discomfort that is experienced by the Bris Milah would have been taken away. And that's not good. Discomfort is a good thing. That's why I have a bit of a thing with the Moya, the Moyalim, they have this obsession of the baby shouldn't cry. It says in Sfarim, it's very good for the baby to cry. It's not a problem. I mean, the mothers don't like it so much. But it says the baby cries, it's a big thing that Hashem cries for the Jewish people, so, right? They want to put anesthetic, which is a shalap yalach even, whatever, it's like a whole, right? So why? The baby shouldn't cry. If the baby cries, it's okay, right? So here also, Avraham Avinu did the Bris Milah, it was in fact a very big test, but also came with discomfort, but the discomfort was part of the process. And if Hashem didn't want to come the first day in order to take it away. Okay. Good, those are a couple of things in the parasha. Now, what I want to do today is actually the Haftorah. That's what you've got in front of you. Now, the Haftorah is two parts. So let me just give a bit of background here, because it's interesting, the context. I'm going to learn with you also a piece of a mimer, a piece of a discourse that the Rebbe gave on this story that I think on a Thursday morning I want to mention this idea, but we'll learn inside a bit deeper, and it's just interesting, but we need the previous background. So the way we know that Haftorah, right, always has a connection to the Parsha. Why is it a connection to the Parsha? Because that's the background to the Haftorah. Right? Are you familiar? The background to the Haftorah was that there was a time under Roman rule where they made a decree that you're not allowed to read the Torah in Shabbos, on Shabbos in Shul. So they came up with a solution, they'll read not the Torah, they'll read the Tanakh. I'll pick something from Tanakh each week, right? Which will be connected to the Parsha. And they will read that instead of the Parsha. Then eventually when the decree was revoked, they kept the Haftorah. That's what we still have Haftorah today, okay? Now, sometimes you find a connection in the Haftorah, which is only in a small part of the Haftorah, right? But the other parts of the Haftorah that seem to have no connection. And sometimes the reason is, at least on the surface, because the Haftorah preferably has to have 21 psukim. Do you know that? The Haftorah in Shul, when you read, you have Maftir and Haftorah, the Haftorah, the part from Tanakh that we read, should have 21 psukim at least, preferably. There are certain exceptions, but most Haftorahs have at least 21 psukim. Why? Because the way they made the Haftorah was that the Haftorah has to come instead of the Torah reading, right? The Torah reading in Shul has 7 call-ups. Each call up has to be a minimum of 3 psukim. That's why it's 21. That's why the Haftorah, which is in substitute for the Torah reading, also has to have 21 psukim. Okay. With this Haftorah, it's a little strange, because, and this is what I'm going to get to at the end, but first you have to understand the story. This Haftorah has 2 stories to it. The second story is the one that has a connection to the Parsha, and it has on its own 21 psukim. And yet we start the Haftorah before. Okay. Which the Rebbe learns that if that's the case, it must be the first one also has a connection to the Parsha. Okay, we'll leave that to the end. What's the second story, just so you understand? The second story is this famous story about Elisha, who went to the town of Shunem. The town called Shunem in Eretz Yisrael. Elisha was the disciple of Eliyahu HaNavi. And Elisha would often travel through the town of Shunem. And there was a particular woman called Isha HaShunamis. That's how she's known, the woman from Shunem, who Elisha would stay by. Eventually, she built Elisha a special room with a candelabra, with a chair, with a table, with a bed. And that used to be Elisha's room. And one time, Elisha stayed there, and Elisha had an attendant called Gehazi. And he told Gehazi, go and call this woman, Isha Shunamis, because you know, we really have such kindness done to her, from her to us, and we need to repay her, so go call her. So she comes, and Elisha says to her, what can I do for you? Anything you need, and so on and so forth. So eventually it comes out that she's childless, she's barren, she doesn't have children. So Elisha said, that next year, this time, at Chayvekes Bein, you will hug a child. There's a whole interesting story that follows, because part of Tanakh is telling about the miracles that Elisha HaNavi performed. The woman picked up that there's something wrong with this bracha, and she said, why are you mocking me? And Elisha left it at that. She had the child, and the child was a few years old. The child died one day, and they called it when she went to get Elisha. Elisha came back and revived him back to life, and that was one of the many times that Eliyahu HaNavi did this as well. Elisha actually performed Tchiyas HaMeisim, the resurrection of the dead. Okay. That's the story. Now that's the story that's connected to the Parsha. The Parsha is about the Malachim coming to Sarah. They're telling Sarah that Lamoyed, next year, this time, you will have a child, the birth of Yitzchak. And later on in the Parsha it says, Hashem pokad es Sarah. Hashem remembered Sarah, like he said, and she gave birth to a son, even though she was elderly. Okay, so that's the connection to the Parsha. But we don't start the Haftorah with that. We start the Haftorah with the previous story. Let's have a look. Okay. You have in front of you this page here. Okay. So we'll read the story inside. V'isha achas minashei b'nei ha-Nevi'im. There was a particular woman from the wives of the students of Nevi'im. Tzaka el Elisha, she came to Elisha. She cried to Elisha, lemer, saying, Avdecha ishi meis, your servant, my husband, has passed away. You know, ki avdecha hoyo, he was your servant. Yoreas Hashem, he feared Hashem. Vehanoisha bo, the creditor is coming. Lokachas eshne yoladai loyla avodim, to take my 2 sons as a slave. I'm not able to pay my debts. Creditor is coming, and he wants to take my 2 sons as servants, as slaves. Okay. So Elisha says to this woman, Ma esalach, what should I do for you? Hagidili, tell me. Ma yeshloch babayis, what do you have at home? Vatoimer, and she says, Ein lishiv choscho kel babayis, your maidservant has nothing at home, ki'im asuch shemen, except for a little jug of oil. Vayoimer, and he says, Lechi, go, sha'ali loch kelim in achutz, go and borrow vessels from outside the house. Me'ez kol shchenoyek, from all your neighbors. Kalim Reikim Al Tamiti, do not go short on empty vessels. Go for it, as many as you can. Uvas v'sagarta adeles ba'adeicha ba'ad b'naich, you will come and you will close the door in front of yourself and your child. V'yitzakta al kol ha'kalim ba'ele, and you will pour oil on all these vessels. V'ahamolei tasi, and then you'll have the leftovers, the full, you'll sell them, in other words, right? She went she started to pour. And then Vayikim Loisa Kalim, and then when all the vessels were full with oil, in other words, basically this one jug of oil spilled over miraculously into all the other Kalim. But Toimer el Benosh, he said to his son, Agishali, I clearly, can you bring me another vessel? But Yermela, Eino, clearly says, that's it, that's all it is. But Yamoid Hashemen, and the oil stopped, which has two translations, either it stopped flowing or also it went up in price, part of the miracle. She came and told Elisha, and he says, now you go and sell all the oil and you'll have enough to sustain anything. Okay, so that's the thing. So obviously there's two questions here. One question is, what's the connection to the parsha? Right? Because the Rebbe is very insistent that if you have a haftorah, even though the connection is later on in the parsha, but because this is haftorah of the parsha, it must have some connection. Right? But before we get to there, a second question is, what relevance is the story? Now, we have a thing like this. This is a whole introduction that he makes. He makes that Torah, the word Torah, comes from the word hoiro, instruction, right? Torah is a book of life. It's a manual of how to live. And therefore, what we need to understand, it's written in many places, that it's not just the laws of Torah that is a manual of how to live. Every word of Torah is part of Torah, which means every word of Torah is hoiro, it's a lesson, it's a manual, right? Which means the sipurim, the stories that are in Tanakh, right, are a lesson. It's a lesson. Yeah. In other words, it's an instruction on how to live. Because during the time of the Nevi'im, there were many stories that happened. Obviously, what we read in Tanakh is not the whole story. There's many other things that happened. But they weren't necessarily included in Tanakh. Why? Because the stories that happened at that time, not necessarily do they possess an eternal lesson. But if Torah is a book of instruction, and number two, we have this principle that Torah is nitzchis, Torah is eternal. So therefore, every story in Tanakh has to have an eternal lesson. Right? And we can't just say that's because the Tanakh wanted to for whatever reason, and there is a whole bunch of stories about Elisha and his miracles in Tanakh, because we learned that Elisha actually did double amount of miracles that Eliyahu HaNavi did, because he was a student that he did double more as his teacher. But it could have made that very quick. It could just, if that was necessary to inform us, which is in itself a question, why we need to know that. But if it's necessary, it could have just said that Elisha did many miracles, double the amount of his master. No, it tells us the whole story. So therefore it's going into all this. So if you turn over, I'm going to read with you inside, learn with you, maybe not the whole thing, but how to read the story on a deeper level. Okay. So the way it works is, the way we take an eternal lesson out of a story of Tanakh is we learn to read the story differently. Meaning we read it on a deeper level. And it goes like this. It says the following. This is a text coming from a discourse. I'll just take another excerpt. It says like this. Koil neshama, every neshama. Ba'aloisa ba'layla, when it goes up at night. We say Shema before night. Sometimes the neshama, if it's conscious and has sensitivity to its spiritual growth. So Ekes Bekoil Mar starts to cry bitterly. Al Richuka Melakim Chaim, because of his distance, his cause between it and Hashem. Often our neshama gets to a point where we feel very numb. We feel spiritually numb. We feel distant from Hashem. And that's how the story of this Haftorah starts. It says like this. V'omar al Pasuk. V'isha Achas Minashay B'nei Anavim. The Pasuk starts, the story starts, there was a woman who was the wife of one of the students of the Nevi'im. What's Isha? What's the woman? Isha b'chinas neshama. That's a woman is referenced to the neshama. We know that's right. That's the neshama receives from Hashem. The woman, right, neshama is feminine. It's like the of Nakeva. So Isha yiras Hashem. It's the woman that fears Hashem. That's the neshama. Achas. Why is it called Isha Achas? He goes through almost every word and explains it. It says, Isha Achas, there was one woman. Why is it called one woman? Ashri Achasim Hashem, because she's one with Hashem. The Neshama is a separate entity to Hashem, but yet one with Hashem. So the Neshama is, Hashem is the male, the Neshama is the female, so to speak. The Neshama receives from Hashem, but it's Isha Achas, it's a Neshama, it's a woman that is one with Hashem, Achas. Minashay b'nei ha-Nevim, and she comes from this, she's the wife of the Nevim. What's Nevim? So we know, Shukinyin ha-Nevu, it's the idea of Nevu. Why is a prophet called a Novi? Right? He says, Sh'inyan ha-Nevuah, right? The idea of Nevuah, Meloshen Niv Sfasayim. There's a pasuk in Tanakh that says Niv Sfasayim. Niv means the dripping of the lips. Right? In other words, a Navi, why is a Navi called a Navi? Because it receives Shemekablim B'chinas Dvar Hashem. The Navi receives what Hashem is pouring. That's why a Navi is called a Navi. So to every Neshama is called a Navi. Cain called Neshama, every Neshama. He kli kibul lekabel hasogas v'gila l'ku. So to every Neshama potentially has the ability, has the capacity to receive the revelation from Hashem. Okay. So the Neshama who is Isha Achas, right? She's an Isha Achas and she's a Navi. That's the Neshama, describing the Neshama. The Neshama comes, Tsa'ako El Elisha. The Neshama comes and screams and cries to Elisha. If you look at Elisha, the word Elisha, Nutrikun, can be made up into two words, Elisha. My God is turning. Like it says, Vayisha Hashem El Hevel. It says in the beginning of Bereishis, when Hashem accepted the sacrifice of Hevel, it says Hashem turned towards Hevel. Sha Elim, my God is turning to me. So we come and we scream to Hashem, and Hashem listens to us. Hashem turns to us, right? So the Neshama comes, the Neshama is crying out to Hashem. The Isha Achas, again, which is the Neshama, it's the Neshama is the Isha, Achas, one with Hashem, comes from Nevim, she has the capacity to receive prophecy from Hashem. Tsa'ako El Elisha comes to scream to Hashem, who's turning towards us. And she says to Hashem, Avdecha Ishi Meis, your servant, my husband has died. What's Ishi? What does Ishi mean? Look what he says. Ishi means Hu Eish Yud, the fire of the Yud. What do I mean? The Yud is that belief that we have in Hashem, right? The first letter of Hashem's name. Shebchinas Eish Yud, the fire of the Yud. Shahoyo Etzli Bislavus Vislatus Ava, which was in ecstasy and inflamed with love, berish peish, which was flames of fire, li kolel v'li batel, to become incorporated and to become completely subservient, b'pchinas yud to the yud, which is the symbol of humility, chokh me'ilah, in other words, the consciousness of Hashem, meis etzli has died. I have no fire left. My spark is gone. Right? We all have that problem sometimes. We think this, we have the spark is gone. Okay, let's just skip a few lines. And it says, V'hanoy Shebo. You see that the next three lines, it says, V'hanoy Shebo. The creditor is coming. The creditor is coming. Lokachas Hashnei Yeladai Lo Lavodim. The creditor wants to take my two children as slaves. What does that mean? What's V'hanoy Shebo? The word Noisha can mean creditor. But Noisha also comes from the word, Meloshen Kinashani Elohim. You know, Yosef called one of his children Menashe. He said that when Hashem sent him down to Mitzrayim, he almost like forgot Hashem, like he went so far. So Noisha is the force that we have, as he says next word, Shezakoi al nefesh abami shimashkachas oisim alakos. It refers to the animal soul. We all know we have a godly soul and animal soul. Now when the godly soul is working well, it's connected to Hashem, and we have love of Hashem, and we have the fire that's burning, the willingness and the excitement and enthusiasm to become connected to the Yud of Anashama. Then it's okay. The nefesh habamis, the animal soul, is kept at bay. But now the spark is gone. So what happens? The nefesh habamis, the animal soul, pounces. The hanoisha, the creditor, which refers to the nefesh habamis, the animal soul, which is the force that makes us forget Hashem. Shimashkachas oisim elokus. Bo lo kachas ashnei yelada is coming to take my two children. What are the two children? The chilu urechimu, love and fear. We know that the intellect that we have is called parents. Chochmah and Bina, we've done this before, is called parents, mother and father. Our emotions are called children, right? The two primary emotions is Chesed and Gevurah, which is the same thing as Ava and Yira, love and fear. Every neshama possesses Ava and Yira. The problem is, when the spark goes, and we can't express the love and fear of Hashem, so where does it go? The Nashani, the Noisha, the creditor, the Nefesh HaBamis, the animal soul, comes to pounce and he wants to take away and channel my capacity to love and the capacity to fear. He wants to take it as slaves. What does it mean, slaves? La'avois zorois, to foreign loves. Tava saguf, the lust of the body. Ulayirois zorois, and to foreign fears. What's foreign fears? Rather than being fearing Hashem, we start to fear pen yechsor lachboy. Maybe we start to fear we're going to have enough money, we're going to have enough parnos, so we start to worry about everything. So indulgence in foreign things, that's the foreign love. Fear and worry is the foreign fear. So the neshama is saying to Hashem, I'm in big trouble, my spark is gone, and my nefesh abamis, the noisha is pouncing. Right? And he wants to take the capacity, the love and fear, my ava v'yira, shnei yolodai, my two children, he wants to channel it into foreign love and foreign fear. Which the more that happens, the more I'm stuck, the more I'm going to get into that, and I won't be able to come back. Last line on the right side. So Elisha says to the neshama, Hashem says to the neshama, your spark is gone, but you're not completely empty. Ma yesh lecha babayis? What's at home? What do you still have? But the neshama says, oh, okay, I do. You're right. Ein li kim osuch shem, and I still have the jug of oil. What's that? Pirush, she'ein la in ki'im etzem nekudas hanasham. I do have the pintalayit. The essence of the neshama is still there. Right? What's the obvious problem? The essence of the neshama is still there, but it's not expressed. It's all very nice. Essence of the neshama, just so you understand the next part, right? The essence of the neshama is the depth, the essence, in other words, the core, at the very core of the soul that is one with Hashem. But love and fear of Hashem, enthusiasm, the fire that we were talking about before, that's not the essence of the neshama, that's the consciousness of the neshama. So it's very nice. You tell me I still have the essence of the neshama, but I need to reveal it so that it will feed the consciousness of the neshama so I can reignite the fire and the love and the fear of Hashem. Right? So how are you going to do that? That's very nice. So he says, what do you have at home? Okay, I have the essence of the neshama. No. Oh, so what do we do? No, but it says more than that. By Yomer, he says, Kalim Reikim. You have to go get empty vessels. What's your empty? There's different pshatim, but this is not what he says over here. Says the empty vessels is empty is a symbol of humility, because the nefesh habamis is the symbol of arrogance, right? For the nefesh habamis to get out of the way, for the animal soul to get out of the way, you have to beat down your ego a little bit, right? Alter Rebbe's whole section in Tanya about this, that there's sometimes no choice, you have to actually beat yourself up a little bit, not yourself, your essence self, but your animalistic part. To realize that it's standing in the way and it's arrogant and it needs to be negated, right? So if you have a look, it says that, just skip a few lines, you'll see it says the beginning line, V'zeu inyan kelim reikim. The person has to go away and think, shetzorich lizbon in harbor, you have to reflect. Eishu kli reikon. You need to really stir yourself up that you're an empty vessel, you're distanced from Hashem, you need really to understand it in order that you should be aroused, right? And then when you're aroused, you'll be able to awaken the etzem haneshama. Then the oil, which is the essence of the neshama, will flow into those vessels. If you're going to be stuck in your arrogance, the etzem haneshama will be there, but it's not going to flow into the empty vessels. It's going to be halted, it's going to be stopped, it's going to be barred from coming in by the arrogance of the soul, by the arrogance of the animal soul. But if kelim reikim, if you go and borrow lots of empty vessels, then you'll be able to let the etzem haneshama, the essence of neshama flow, and you'll reignite that spark that's gone. In other words, there's always a starter at the essence of neshama that can restart the spark. See, this is the point of the Maamar, right? That you can't. The lesson here is that a person can never say, I'm lost. The spark's gone. The spark's gone is a big problem. Because we have to serve Hashem not only from the essence of neshama, we have to serve Hashem consciously. We have to feel enthusiasm, we have to feel love, we have to feel fear. When it's gone, so it seems like it's disappeared. The answer is not disappear. The answer is we've always got that jug of oil, we've always got the essence of the neshama. But we have to find the starter. How are we going to reignite the consciousness of the neshama? For that, we need kelim reikim. We need to go through a process of humility, getting rid of the ego, and feeling distance from Hashem so that we revive within ourselves a yearning to be close to Hashem. And then the essence of the neshama comes gushing and fills up all the kelim, fills up all the vessels. Yeah? Not only that, but he says, then he says, go sell it. And then he says, you and your children now will live with the leftovers. How does this fit into the narrative? This new narrative? Leftovers means, yis noisar means extra. You'll have even extra. Now when you go through that process, you'll even be in a better position than when you had the spark. It'll be a stronger spark. Once you go through this process, it'll be what we call yisroin ha'oim and ha'choshech, the advantage of the light over the darkness. Okay. That's the explanation of the story. And that's the relevance of the story. That's the story on a deeper level. That's the story with its eternal lesson. It's a story not about Elisha, not about a woman, not about oil. It's a story about the neshama, loss of spark, the essence of the neshama, and refilling the consciousness of the neshama with the thing. Okay. Now the question is, What's the connection to the parsha? Very nice story. Very nice idea. What's the connection to the parsha? Right? So the connection of the parsha explains as follows. The beginning of the parsha. The parsha says, Vayera Elov Hashem. Hashem appeared to Avraham Avinu. Why did he appear to him? Levakir Esachayla. To visit the sick. So in Kabbalah it says, there's a very deep idea here. What's the gematria of the word chayla? What's the gematria of the word sick? 49. What's the symbolism of 49?
Levels of impurity.
Or levels of purity.
Or purity, yeah.
Right, levels of holiness, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How many levels of holiness are there?
50.
What's the difference between 49, first 49 levels and the 50th level?
One.
No, say what's qualitatively, what's the difference? The difference is like this, that 49 levels is the level of which a human being can reach on their own. The 50th level is a gift from Hashem. Right? When Avraham Avinu, in this week's parasha, last week's parasha Hashem gave Avraham Avinu a mitzvah. He went all the way. He did whatever he could. Until the end of the parasha, he gave the mitzvah of Bris Milah. But Avraham Avinu, once he did that, he had done everything that he could do as a human being. But he was still missing. And that's the spiritual status of being sick. Chole. Chole means you're only 49, but you're still missing the 50th. Right? Vayera Elav Hashem, Hashem appears to him, levakir esachayla, to visit the sick, to heal the sick, to give him a new revelation. Avraham Avinu in Lech Lecha is dramatically different to Avraham Avinu before Lech Lecha. True, he becomes the first Jew in Lech Lecha. But Avraham Avinu in Vayera is dramatically different to Avraham Avinu before Vayera. Vayera, Lech Lecha is Avraham Avinu doing whatever he can. Vayera Elav Hashem, Hashem appears to him. That's the gift of the 50th. Levakir Esachoyle, to visit the sick and to heal the sick, to give him that gift. Beyond the 49. Right? In other words, to raise the person above the human limitation. Up to 49 is still within the realm of what a human being could reach in the context of being human. The 50th level is a gift that Hashem gives to us, which raises us, elevates us above being human. Right? And that's the same story as after. The Etzem HaNeshama, all the levels of the neshama, the consciousness of the neshama, that's what we operate in, that's what we do. The essence of the neshama is the gift from Hashem. And when we are struggling on the consciousness of the neshama, the only way to do it then is to rise above the human ability, the human limitation. It needs a process, it needs us to do work, just like Nira Ramavina to first go through Parshas Lech Lecha. That work in the context of the story of Tanakh is Kalim, Reikim, Al Tamiti. You got to go through the humility process. You got to go through the process. But when you do that, Hashem will give you the gift. And the gift allows you to reignite the spark when it actually disappeared. And it allows you to do something miraculous. That's why a yid with the Etzem HaNeshama is really not bound up with nature. In other words, it's intrinsically, we have the ability to rise above who we are. Because we can connect to the essence of the neshama, which is a gift from Hashem, which gives us the power of infinity. And that extra level of revelation, that's the gift of Hashem in the neshama, the essence of neshama, that's the connection between the beginning of the parasha, which Vayera Elav Hashem, that Hashem gave him the 50th level to elevate him above the human ability. All right, we'll start a little early today. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.